शिवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 11 टाइटल स्वयंभुव मनु एडवाइसेस ध्रुव महाराज टेक्स्ट 3-5। Text 3 and 4 have no purport, so I'll just read the text in the translation and then we'll go on to text 5. Text 3. Tasyarshastram dhanushi prayunjata suvarna punkha kalahamsa vasasa vinihrishrita avivishur dvishad balam Yathavanam Bhima Rava Shikandinaha. Translation. Even as Dhruva Maharaj fixed the weapon made by Narayana Rishi onto his bow, arrows with golden shafts and feathers like the wings of a swan flew out from it. They entered the enemy soldiers with a great hissing sound, just as peacocks enter a forest with tumultuous crowing. Text 4. तैस्तिग्मधारै प्रदने शीलिमुखै इतस्ततः पुण्यजना उपद्रुता तम् अभ्यधावन् कुपिता उदायुधा सुपर्णम् उन्नधा हना इवाहया। Translation. Those sharp arrows dismayed the enemy soldiers, who became almost unconscious, but various yakshas on the battlefield, in a rage against Dhruva Maharaj, somehow or other collected their weapons and attacked. Just as serpents agitated by Garuda rush towards Garuda with upraised hoods, all the Yaksha soldiers prepared to overcome Dhruva Maharaj with their upraised weapons. Text 5. Satan Pratakshay Abhidhavato Mride. निकृत बाहूरु शिरोधरो धरान् निनाय लोकं परमर्क मंडलम् व्रजन्ति निर्भिद्ययं ऊर्ध्वरेतसा। सतन् प्रत्यक्षे अभिधावतो मृधे निकृत बाहूरु शिरोधरो धरान् निनाय लोकं परमर्क मंडलम् व्रजन्ति निर्भिद्ययं ऊर्ध्वरेतसा। सतान् प्रत्यक्षैर् अभिधावतो मृदे निकृत बाहूरु शिरोधरो धरान् निनाय लोकं परमर्क मंडलम् व्रजन्ति निर्भिद्ययं ऊर्ध्वरेतसा। Mandanam एकं परमार्थमण्डलम् सतन् प्रसक्तेरभिधावतो मृगे विनाय लोकं परमार्थमण्डलम् सतं प्रसक्तेरभिधावतो मृगे नाय लोकं जन्ति निर्विद्यं भूत्वरेतसा सहा ही ध्रुव महाराज तन ऑल द यक्षस कृषक कई बाय हिज एरोज अभिधावता कमिंग फॉरवर्ड मृदे इन द बैटल फील्ड निकृता बीइंग सेपरेटेड बाहु आर्म्स Uru, thighs, Shiradhara, necks, Udaran, and bellies, Ninaya, delivered, Lokam, to the planet, Param, supreme, Arkamandalam, the sun globe, Brajanti, go, Nirbidya, piercing, Yam, to which Urdhvaretasa, those who do not discharge semen at any time. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the Yakshas coming forward, he immediately took his arrows and cut the enemies to pieces, separating their arms, legs, heads and bellies from their bodies. He delivered the Yakshas to the planetary system, which is situated above the sun globe and which is attainable only by first-class brahmacharis who have never discharged their semen. Purport. To be killed by the Lord or by his devotees is auspicious for non-devotees. The Yakshas were killed indiscriminately by Dhruva Maharaj, but they attained the planetary system attainable only for brahmacharis who never discharged their semen. As the impersonalist jnanis or the demons killed by the Lord attain brahmaloka or satyaloka, persons killed by a devotee of the Lord also attain satyaloka. To reach the satyaloka planetary system described here, one has to be elevated above the sun globe. Killing, therefore, is not always bad. If the killing is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee or in great sacrifices, it is for the benefit of the entity killed in that way. Material so-called non-violence is very insignificant in comparison to killing done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotees. Even when a king or the state government kills a person who is a murderer, that killing is for the benefit of the murderer, for thus he may become cleared of all sinful reactions. An important word in this verse is Urdhvaretasa, which means Brahmacharis who have never discharged semen, celibacy is so important that even though one does not undergo any austerities, penances or ritualistic ceremonies prescribed in the Vedas, if one simply keeps himself a pure Brahmachari, not discharging his semen, the result is that after death he goes to the Satyaloka. Generally, sex life is the cause of all miseries in the material world. In the Vedic civilization, sex life is restricted in various ways. Out of the whole population of the social structure, only the grihasthas are allowed restricted sex life. All others refrain from sex. The people of this age especially do not know the value of not discharging semen. As such, they are variously entangled with material qualities and suffer an existence of struggle only. The word urdhvaretasa especially indicates the Mayavadi sannyasis who undergo strict principles of austerity. But in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 16, the Lord says that even if one goes up to Brahmaloka, he again comes back. Abrahma bhuvanalloka punanavartino arjuna. Therefore, actual mukti or liberation can be attained only by devotional service, because by devotional service one can go above Brahmaloka or to the spiritual world where from he never comes back. Mayavadi sannyasis are very proud of becoming liberated, but actual liberation is not possible unless one is in touch with the Supreme Lord in devotional service. It is said, Harim vinana shatim taranti, without Krishna's mercy, no one can have liberation. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport. Om ajnana timirandasya ginanjana shilakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamahyam tadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yudhapadakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunathanvitam tamsajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana saitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shri vishakhanvitamscha Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swaminiti Namine Namocharya Padaya Nitaya Kripa Pradayine Gorakatha Damadaya Nagar Gramatarine Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Gopi Paranadanatase Tinamine Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Ukam Karoti Vachalam Bhangum Langayati Girim Yatkripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dhanatarinam Yatkripatamaham Vande Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishwaram Katanchana Smriti Yasmin Dushkaram Sukaram Bhavet Vismriti Vipritam Syat Shri Chaitanyam Namamitam. So here Dhruva Maharaj is continuing his fight with the Yakshas, and we see that Prabhupada mentions in the first part of this purport that the punishment given by the Lord or his pure devotees are always auspicious. So here in this context we see that Dhruva Maharaj, the Yakshas whom he killed, were obtained such a exalted position. They attained the planetary system, which is obtained only by those brahmacharis who have never discharged their semen. So this is the glory of being punished by the Lord or by his devotees. So there is nothing inauspicious when it comes to punishment by the Lord or by his devotees. In our Krishna consciousness movement, there is one instance where when Prabhupada is trying to get his land in Bombay, he had to face a lot of resistance from Mr. Nair. So much so that at one point when Mr. Nair died, Prabhupada said, I pray to Narsingadev to kill him. What can I do? So because it was by the prayer of Srila Prabhupada, and it happened due to the intervention of Narasimhadev, we definitely think that the destination of Mr. Nair would be auspicious. But however, Prabhupada said in this, in the spiritual world there would be an ISKCON, but there would be no Mr. Nair. So both auspicious and not an ISKCON. So we can't conceive it, I guess, at this point. But nevertheless, we know that it was auspicious, because whatever happens by the will of the Lord, by the desire of the Lord or by his devotees, is always auspicious. And in our own lives, if when we encounter different difficult situations which may be granted by the Lord for our purification, we should take it in that spirit that the Lord is all auspicious, and therefore anything that is given to us is meant for our purification. Just like Kunti, she's praying to the Lord for difficulties. So that is an exalted state of consciousness, because she sees there's nothing called good or bad. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is good, that is bad. These are all relative conceptions. So when it comes to Krishna and his devotees, anything that Krishna does for his devotees is beyond the considerations of good and bad. It is always all auspicious. So this should be our mood when we execute our practice of devotional service, that anything that we encounter is an opportunity for us to advance in our Krishna consciousness. Due to our conditioned state of existence, we may not be able to perceive it as such, but nevertheless, by sticking to the process of devotional service, by taking the association of advanced devotees, we can see everything that happens to our life, happens in our life, as the mercy of the Lord. In the second part of the purport, Prabhupada writes about the glories of celibacy, and he also writes about the disadvantages of not being celibate. Now this is a theme that occurs throughout Prabhupada's books, throughout the Bhagavatam, throughout all the Vedic literatures. In fact, Prabhupada writes that in different places, he writes that the whole goal of Vedic civilization was to make sex life nil. So that is the whole goal of Vedic civilization. And this is the characteristic of a first-class civilization, that everything in that civilization is geared to make sex life nil. Now, the opposite of that is what we find today, where everything is arranged to make sex life more and more better or comfortable, whatever it may be. So the opposite of that is the Vedic civilization, which is considered high class. And Prabhupada writes in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in a purport, in fact, purport to text 12 of chapter 2, canto 2, chapter 2, text 12. So there Prabhupada mentions that Shukadeva Goswami, he gives alternatives for eating, sleeping and shelter, but he gives no alternative for sex life. There is no alternative sex life, one has to give it up. Then one may ask, okay, but grihasthas are permitted sex life, so isn't that an alternative? No, it is not an alternative. Alternative means something which can replace something else. That's the definition of an alternative. Alternative means one thing which can replace another thing. So whereas eating, Shukadeva Goswami says, and you, when you walk in the forest, you always find some fruits. Sleeping, you have your hand as pillows. Shelter, you have caves. So he gives an alternative for these things, but for sex life there's no alternative. So then what then is the concept of sex life that is permitted within marriage? It is not an alternative, because Prabhupada writes, one who marries, he writes in a letter that one who marries to subdue lust is mistaken, because it is not an alternative. Rather, it is a license. It's a license, in fact it's a license with an expiry date. It's not a whole life license, it's a license with an expiry date. So it's not an alternative, it is a license, and this license has to be given up. There's no question of, it is not an all life license. So this is our Vedic civilization, that that sex life is permitted only within the grihastha ashram, and even within the grihastha ashram it is permitted strictly only for the purpose of procreation of children. And Prabhupada is quite explicit about it. There is no ambiguity whatsoever about it. But sometimes there is a debate I remember a couple of years ago, I think it's 2009, there is one devotee who began to write that Prabhupada generally when he was talking to guests, he would, while referring to the four regulative principles, he would say, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex. So when he says no illicit sex, he would usually define it as sex outside of marriage. So then this devotee was trying to argue that within marriage, since Prabhupada himself has defined it like that, so it's kind of broad, you know. So, but however, Prabhupada has been very, very clear, and I think I just picked up one particular thing where Prabhupada writes that, I think it may not be clear. Yeah, but I mean, there are several different purports while I was preparing for this class, I found several different purports where Prabhupada writes that, that in Krishna consciousness, sex life is meant only for the purpose of begetting children. In fact, the GBC even clarified this position a couple of years ago in its resolutions, that it clarified that within marriage, sex life is to be strictly restricted for the procreation of children. This is the standard. If one is not able to follow that standard, that's a different issue altogether, that one can try to come to that standard. That is not discouraged, but it is essential. It is not that one is practicing Krishna consciousness and so even though one may not be following so strictly in grihastha life, it is fine. No, celibacy is essential. There is no question of doing away with the concept of celibacy. However, it cannot get to the level of paranoia where I think during the time of Harikesh Maharaj, there is one of his disciples who committed suicide because he couldn't follow the principles. And when I was teaching at the school, I had one of my students who came up with me and we had a lot of discussion on this topic of, he was trying to say that celibacy is first, then we practice Krishna consciousness. Celibacy is first. That's, he was trying to emphasize that point. But however, we see from the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when he would do nocturnal sankirtan, once when he was performing his nocturnal sankirtan, Shiva's Pandit had allowed a brahmachari to enter the kirtan. Brahmachari was actually a very nice brahmachari, but he was not a devotee. And Lord Chaitanya had strictly restricted his kirtans only to those who are devotees. But because Shiva's Pandit found that brahmachari to be nice, strict brahmachari, and he would only drink milk, very austere, he somehow permitted him into the kirtan. But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discovered, he was very angry. He wanted him to be removed from the kirtan. But because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt that this brahmachari is proud of being celibate. So Lord Chaitanya did not like it. He gave the example of Gajendra. He gave the example of Hanuman. He gave the example of the gopis. He said, they are the ones whom I like because they are devotees. He said, and this brahmachari is proud of his position of being celibate. So then, the brahmachari, Lord Chaitanya was actually testing him because the brahmachari, he accepted the chastisement of the Lord and he said, what kindness it was that I could see, witness the great dancing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And seeing that humble mood, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him and placed his lotus feet upon his head. So the point that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was trying to bring out there was, it is bhakti, it is devotional service which attracts the Lord. So, and through the practice of devotional service, one becomes freed from sex life. It is not that sex life, avoiding sex life is first, Krishna consciousness is next. No, Krishna consciousness is always the first. It is always the priority. And by practice, however, by practice of devotional service, one has to see whether one is getting freed from sex desire or not. If one is not getting freed from sex desire, Prabhupada writes, that is just like hunger. And he says, when you eat food, you should feel, again, this he mentions in his purport in the first canto, in the earlier cantos, that when you eat food, you should feel that your hunger is going away. So when you practice Krishna consciousness, you should feel that your sex desire is going away. This is the test of advancement in Krishna consciousness. So the focus should always be on practicing Krishna consciousness nicely, and while at the same time not neglecting any of the regulative principles, because these regulative principles are given to us by Srila Prabhupada, so that our advancement, this is an essential aspect of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that unless we practice this strictly and rigorously, that we cannot advance steadily. Our advancement will be hampered. In fact, that's the first thing that Rupa Goswami mentions in his Nectar of Instruction, that one has to control the urges of the tongue, belly, genitals, and the mind. Because without that, there's no question of spiritual progress. However, this control comes by intense absorption in Krishna consciousness. By intense absorption in Krishna consciousness, one is able to control the urges of the senses. And so, therefore, we have to be very careful and attentive about our practice of Krishna consciousness. So that priority should be there. At the same time, we should know that that these regulated prohibitions are there, and we should earnestly strive to follow these prohibitions very, very carefully. In fact, Prabhupada mentions that the grahastha, a good grahastha, is one who has undergone this training of brahmacharya. And without the training of brahmacharya, one cannot be a good grahastha. In fact, he says one cannot be satisfied with one's wife if one is not a brahmachari. One does not practice brahmacharya properly, or one is not trying to be a brahmachari, one can never be satisfied with one's wife. So therefore, this aspect of celibacy is an intrinsic part of our Krishna conscious process. Whether one is a brahmachari, whether one is a grahastha, whether one is a vanaprastha, whether one is a sannyasi, this celibacy is very intrinsic. It's the common denominator for all the four ashrams. And Prabhupada mentions, in fact I got it here, if in the Vedic civilization sex life is allowed only in a restricted way, it is for the married couple and only for begetting children. And then Prabhupada writes, what kind of children? That's interesting. Prabhupada writes, the grahastha is responsible for producing first quality brahmacharis, vanaprastha and sannyasis. Notice that grahastha are not found here in this purport. Prabhupada writes, the grahastha is responsible for producing first quality brahmacharis, vanaprastha and sannyasis. Somehow that word grahastha is omitted. I think it's deliberate, because grahastha has to become vanaprastha. There's no question of remaining in grahastha life till the end of one's life. One has to give up the grahastha life and take up vanaprastha and sannyas. So sometimes there's this discussion, because Prabhupada also said in some places that if one is very perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, then one need not take sannyas. So, but however, that is more like an exception there rather than the default. The default is that one goes through, because Prabhupada is very fond of sannyasis and preaching. So the default is that one progresses through grahastha life, and one takes up the life of sannyas, and one engages fully in the preaching of the Lord. So sometimes the argument is given, what is wrong if the wife is a devotee, if the children are devotees, and so on. But if you see the example of Queen Kunti, Kunti had the association of her sons who were all pure devotees. Nevertheless, as she says, that she prays to the Lord, please free me from these attachments to my children. And there in the purport into that, to the prayers by Queen Kunti, Prabhupada mentions that Kunti had some familial considerations there, because she favored more her sons than the Yadus. So therefore, Prabhupada writes, there was some consideration there. And what is Kunti's platform? Kunti is on a platform where she's praying, please give me troubles continuously. She's on that platform. And even on that platform, she's saying, please free me from these attachments. So we should be conscious of our position. First of all, are we on that platform that we can pray, please give me miseries, please give me miseries so that I can see your lotus face all the time? I mean, if we are on that platform, then we have examined that, okay, what's it, are we free from attachment? Like the way, do we still have attachments? Queen Kunti is speaking of attachments to her pure devotee sons. So just because one's wife is a devotee, just because one has devotee children, does not mean that one may not be attached to them in an inappropriate way. So the process of Krishna consciousness is to be, one has to give up all kinds of inappropriate attachments and dedicate oneself fully to the service of the Lord. Otherwise, why would Kardam Muni have to give up married life? Because Kardam Muni had the supreme personality of God himself as his own son. Nevertheless, Prabhupada mentions, he gave it up. He gave it up because he had some attachment to family life. So in our process of Krishna consciousness, it's a progressive path. One, brahmachari, grahastha, sannyas, vanaprastha, sannyas. Either brahmachari to sannyas or brahmachari to sannyas through the grahastha platform. So, nevertheless, we have to, the point is that somehow or the other, we have to get to the stage of making sex life nil and being free from this desire for sex life. Prabhupada writes that, that if one has this attraction for sex life, then one should understand that there is delay in liberation. He mentions this in a lecture, that if we see that we have some attraction for sex life, then we should understand that there is some delay in liberation. So we have to very vigorously engage in the process of devotional service, so that at some point in time, we can be completely free from this sex desire. And it is possible. It is possible. Prabhupada writes in one place, in one lecture, I think it was a letter, that he writes that you may think that will I be able to do it? Prabhupada says, yes, you will be able. And he repeats, yes, you will be able. You simply pray to Krishna. You simply pray to Krishna and Krishna will be able to do it. He says, Krishna, he'll do it. It is possible. It is not an impossible ideal that Prabhupada has set for us. He has set a practical ideal for us. And so, and this is an ideal which all of us can attain, and we should be hopeful that we can attain it. And because Prabhupada said so, and he's given us that assurance, and therefore it is possible. And in fact, for us, those who are practicing devotional service, we should know that that anything short of that is not what we are meant to be doing, what we're meant for. We're meant to reach the highest standard. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions that for somebody who is practicing devotional service, that famous verse, Nishkarenchasya Bhagavad Bhajanonmukhasya, where he mentions that, alas, for a person who is seriously desiring to cross the material ocean and engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification, or seeing a woman who is similarly interested, is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. So we should be conscious of this fact, that to fancy some attraction for material life is to drink the poison willingly. And especially these days, there is so much of proliferation of material life with the cinemas, the movies, the internet, and different ways by which the civilization of centered around sex life is so much prominent, that there is so much of distraction. So one may wonder, how is it possible that in this age, amidst, as time progresses, it's getting more worse. So how is it possible? Is Prabhupada's promise that we can be completely free from sex desire, is it possible? Yes, it is possible. It is possible at all times. There's no question, because the process of devotional service is stronger than any advancement of mundane materialistic life. The process of devotional service is stronger than any advancement that materialistic civilization can make in their pursuits. So therefore, we should be confident that yes, it is possible, because Prabhupada has given us that assurance. And and also we can attain that by a mood of humility. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prays to the Lord in his Gopinath prayers, beautiful prayers, where he mentions, "Oh Gopinath, how shall I make any advancement when my mind has come under the control of the powerful senses and does not abandon its attachment to materialism? Oh Gopinath, after sitting down in the core of my heart and subduing my mind, please take me to you. In this way, the horrible dangers of this world will disappear. Oh Gopinath, you are Hrishikesha, the Lord of the senses. Seeing me so helpless, please control these senses and deliver me from this dark and perilous worldly existence." So here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is petitioning the Lord. He says that you are the master of the senses. I am helpless. I cannot control my senses. You are the master of the senses. So please control my senses and deliver me from the dark and perilous worldly existence. So we should always know that ultimately it's not by our endeavor that we can control our senses, but rather it is by the grace of Krishna that if we recognize this, that Krishna is capable of delivering us from this worldly, from this dark and perilous worldly existence. So therefore, we have to depend on Hrishikesha, the master of the senses,
for coming out of this platform of material life and being engaged in the platform of a pure devotional service. And furthermore, we should also be fearful of material life. Prabhupada writes, in fact, in that place where he says that Krishna will protect you, he also says that one should also be afraid of Maya. And in his 10th canto purports to Devaki's fear of Kamsa, Prabhupada writes that every devotee should also be fearful of material life, like the way Devaki was afraid of Kamsa. So simultaneously, we should have faith in the protection of Krishna, that he will protect us and he will deliver us. We should also be simultaneously afraid that we may fall into Maya. Just like Prabhupada, with that famous incident where once he was praying and one of his disciples went up to him and asked him, Prabhupada, what were you praying? Prabhupada said, I was praying to the Lord that I may not fall down. So both the things are important, that we should pray that we should please, oh my Lord, please protect me from falling down. One should because one should always be fearful of material existence, because Shukadeva Goswami, such an elevated Paramahamsa, he stayed for 16 years in the womb of his mother. Only when Krishna promised him that he will not fall into Maya, was he willing to come out. And the moment he came out, he just left. He just went and walked off into the forest. So this process of dependence on the Lord and fear of material energy should be simultaneously present in our consciousness to advance rapidly on the path of Krishna consciousness. And the Prabhupada in the second part of the purport also mentions that that all the difficulties in the present, he writes that as such they are variously entangled with material qualities and suffer an existence of struggle only. So this material life, the so-called material life, means only struggle. There is nothing else. There is only struggle. And Prabhupada says everybody is a servant. So simply people are engaged in this hard struggle for material life. Prabhupada writes, one is a hero in two ways. By becoming a servant of Maya, one may be a big businessman or a different, one is trying to be so many different things. But actually, he's fully under the control of Maya. Maya is making him dance like a puppet, like how we have that photograph, we had that painting in the Bhagavad Gita where three modes of nature are making a person act like a puppet. So that's the position of a materialist. So the other way of becoming a hero, Prabhupada writes, is by surrendering to Krishna. So you can become a hero in two ways. By surrendering to Maya, which is actually becoming a zero, not a hero, but sarcastically Prabhupada writes that you can become a hero by surrendering to Maya or by surrendering to Krishna. So by surrendering to Krishna, Krishna can make us dance. And that dance is very wonderful. It attracts the whole world. Like Prabhupada writes that, oh my master, please make me dance. Make me dance as you like. And that dance is so attractive that it attracted all of us to Krishna consciousness. So when Krishna makes us dance, that is attractive. That is attractive not only for us, but also for all the other living entities. It benefits all other living entities. So this point that we should know, that Prabhupada had very, very poor estimation of the modern civilization. In Mayapur, before his disappearance, February 19th, 1977, there's a conversation about the focal point of modern civilization, so strong that I won't mention it here in this class, because Prabhupada did not mention that in a class. It is so strong that you can perhaps read it up. It was Prabhupada mentioned this whole thing. He described what is this modern civilization, and he told Adhikesha Maharaj, you speak this in the court, and he said, publish this. And it's extremely strong. I think it's the strongest ever you can find, Prabhupada on modern civilization. And in fact, Prabhupada asks after speaking so strongly, what do you think? And is it all right? And then Prithviputra Prabhu was there in the room and says, yes, Prabhupada, you are very bold. So you can see that. I mean, you can see Prabhupada in all guns blazing form in that conversation. And February 19, 1977. It's so strong that I can't speak it here. You can please read it up in your, when you go home or whatever. And some of you may be already aware of that conversation. And so Prabhupada, he didn't care whether somebody was so-called respectable in the material world or whatever. Like sometimes people would, especially in India, people would come to him. Like there are two different instances where one man came to him, he was a respectable gentleman, and in a conversation with him, he was trying to explain to Prabhupada, I have this so many children, this son is doing this, this daughter is doing this, and so many different things. And Prabhupada just heard. And after he left, Prabhupada turned to his disciples and said with disgust, he's simply talking about his sex life. So although he was a respectable gentleman, but Prabhupada didn't care. So that was Prabhupada's stand throughout his life, that he condemned material civilization. And he didn't like devotees to have any appreciation for this kind of civilization. He said it's worse than fourth class civilization. Fourth class is meant for Shudras. He said it's worse than fourth class civilization. So we should be very, very clear about this position of what is the civilization in which we are living and what is our goal. And one thing that I wanted to mention is quite humorous. I just noticed yesterday that we know that Prabhupada gave a very unique definition for advancement in devotional service. He said, the more you chastise Darwin, the more you advance in devotional service. A very unique definition of advancement. But it's true that he said, if you can more chastise Darwin, the more you advance. But surprisingly, there's also a place where Prabhupada appreciates Darwin. Or at least, it looks like appreciation. Where he says that sex is very prominent among animals like monkeys. And such people who are enlivened by sex may be called descendant of monkeys. And then Prabhupada gives credit to Darwin. Just like Darwin mentions in his theory that such people have come from monkeys. So Prabhupada concedes that point to Darwin. Of course, Prabhupada is not conceding it in the sense that men evolved from monkeys to humans, but he's trying to say that these people in their past lives were monkeys. So there's one exception where Prabhupada even mentions Darwin in his purport, actually. So probably Darwin would get some benefit by being chastised by Prabhupada so much. So, and he says that it's interesting that Prabhupada, actually, I was mentioning this incident where Prabhupada speaks about this respectable man, and he says that he's only interested in sex life. Here in this particular thing where he speaks that these people are descendants of monkeys, he says, those who actually descend from the monkeys are interested in expanding their aristocratic families. So Prabhupada is not just talking about some hippie or some layman. Prabhupada in fact is referring here, he's including the aristocrat. He says, those who actually descend from the monkeys are interested in expanding their aristocratic families through sex. This is from the 5th canto, chapter 14, text 30. So Prabhupada, he did not spare anybody from the hippies to the aristocratic men. He felt that all of them are the same. Whether it is, he said, stool, lower part, upper parts, all the stool. It's all stool. So Prabhupada was very uncompromising in his attack on modern civilization. And I remember that these days it's not very easy to find that book on the bookshelves. But in the 90s, there is this book called Endless Love by Ravindra Suraprabhu. And that is actually a collection of essays from the Back to Godhead, and each of those essays is a masterpiece. Each of them is it's very difficult to say which is better than the other. Each is a masterpiece, but there's one particular essay in that which is called Immortal Longings, and that is a must read. When I was in college and we were all students, my friends and I, we knew this whole article by heart. It actually runs into 8 pages. And we could just rattle it off in under 10 minutes without a glitch. So those are very interesting days, because that article is it's an absolute stunner, because everything that you need to know, and it's presented in a very, very strong and powerful style. And one thing that is that really stands out in that is he mentions, Ravindra Surya mentions that death is an illusion that we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this material world. Sex is the essence of that desire. Sex is therefore death. So he brings it out very, very nicely. Death is an illusion that we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this material world. Sex is the essence of the desire. Sex therefore is death. So that's called eloquence. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that eloquence means truth defined concisely. So this is true eloquence. In fact, during the 90s, the Philadelphia temple used to sell a t-shirt called Sex is Death. And I tried very hard to get it during my student years, but I failed to get it. These days I don't think they're selling it anymore. And in fact, in that article, he also goes on to mention how by the practice of Krishna consciousness, one can attain the stage of perfect, attain the stage of perfection. And he ends that article in an equally fascinating way. He says that, I think I'll end my talk also with that same paragraph. He says that, I know from experience that by the practice of Bhakti Yoga, especially by the chanting of the mantra in the form of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what seems so formidable a barrier will become easy to cross, and your world and the world beyond and your world beyond birth and death is at hand. So he says that I'll repeat it again, that what once seemed so formidable a barrier is easy to cross, and the world beyond birth and death is at hand. So I think I'll stop with that, and if there are any questions or comments. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. You gave a real good example of how someone was misconstruing Prabhupada's teachings by saying that just because sometimes, well, he was saying, because Prabhupada sometimes says sex in marriage, that therefore that's the philosophy. And of course he was just misconstruing around his own desires. I have another reading of that, and I want to know what you think about it. Because Prabhupada does this a lot. He'll say, he'll present things in different ways according to the time, the place, the people. Sometimes I think when Prabhupada doesn't define sex that strictly, only for procreation, that he's implicitly acknowledging that it's a work in progress, that we're all works in progress, and that we shouldn't, what to say, we should know the goal. And if we read Prabhupada in a holistic way, we will see that strict definition. But when people slip and do indulge like that, they shouldn't, you know, damn themselves to have hell forever. And even one could even say that if people are married and they do slip like that, that's a whole lot better than what's going on throughout the world. So it's a step in the right direction. But I wondered what you think about that, because you can also take that as an excuse not to progress. So please comment.
Yeah, actually, if you notice Prabhupada's letters that he wrote to his disciples in the early days when they asked for advice on, I mean, having children, Prabhupada writes, it's interesting that actually Prabhupada in all those letters, he only writes that one should strictly follow as far as possible, he writes. You know, means he uses that expression, as far as possible. So although, he's emphasizing it strictly, but he also uses that expression, one should strictly follow this as far as possible. You know, so definitely, it's a work in progress. And in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, text 31's purport, and that's a very fascinating thing. I think I have it here.
In the beginning of Krishna consciousness.
In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. It's very strong. So, Prabhupada recognizes the struggle, and he's in fact encouraging devotees that one should not feel resentful of this principle. That's most important. And work sincerely without consideration of defeat or hopelessness. And in fact, as you may know, the Prabhupada sometimes cried seeing the difficulties that his devotees had. So Prabhupada definitely recognizes any sincere hard work. And in fact, he says that in one purport, he writes that if somebody deliberately does it then he says that is very abominable. But if one does it out of habit or out of weakness or something, that's Prabhupada could, you usually would tolerate it and encourage devotees to progress. I mean, if that is the process of devotional service. But then somebody asked me this question, what does beginning stages mean? That it's a proper right, beginning stages of Krishna consciousness. What does that mean? I guess that this would mean before anartha, until anartha nivritti, because anartha nivritti means all the anarthas have gone away. Until you reach the stage of nishta, I guess it could be called the stage of initial stages of Krishna consciousness.
Thank you.
So I think I agree with you on that.
Hare Krishna. I have a couple of comments and a question. That story you told about Prabhupada praying, there's a little bit before that. And I don't know the exact context, but Prabhupada was explaining the difference between himself and the devotees. And he said, the difference between me and you is I cannot fall down, but you can. And then the next morning he's praying to the deities that he can't fall down. And then I was thinking of another story, because you were mentioning how Prabhupada in a lecture said that as we advance, we can know by our detachment or our freedom from sex desire. And there's a story, it's kind of funny. It was either a guest or a devotee, or they must have been talking about this topic, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I have no sex desire. And Prabhupada said, then I think you should go see a doctor. So that I was thinking, you know, the idea of no sex desire as opposed to detached from sex or not interested in it, you know, so we can distinguish that. And then the story about Mr. Nair, it's in Shrutakirti's book because he asked Prabhupada about that. And it's interesting because Prabhupada said, I installed Krishna in Bombay and I didn't, and Krishna was being so disturbed. So Prabhupada was so concerned that I invited Krishna, I didn't want to disturb him. So I asked Krishna to do something, to take care of, to get Mr. Nair out of the way. And then Prabhupada said, the last time I saw Dr. Nair, he didn't look robust. He said, he's a very robust man, but he didn't look healthy. And he said, I knew something was going to happen. And so after he died, he actually asked that question. He said, well, did Krishna kill him and now is he going to be liberated? And Prabhupada laughed. He said, it's not exactly like that. So my question is, I was thinking how when devotees that are dear to us leave this world, we cry, we lament, even years later, we grieve because we're attached to them. And Bhagavatam says attachment to devotees, we should be attached to devotees. The same attachment we have for material things, it should be placed on the devotee, and that liberates us. So then, how do we distinguish, because this is natural, so how do we distinguish attachment to wife or husband or children if they're devotees, and attachment to God brothers, God sisters, God uncles, you know. Perhaps attachment to gurus, maybe it's a different category. But just the whole concept, because one could argue and say, well, they're devotees and I'm attached to devotees. I appreciate their devotion and so forth. So what would you say to that?
Usually in the context of family, this is my realization, I just present humbly whatever I know. Usually in the context of family, one has the sense of receiving some personal benefit out of it. Not just, it's not always, like for example, when we go and, serve a great devotee, what can you get materially from them? You get spiritual instructions and whatever. But whereas in the context of wife and husband, the husband serves wife, the wife serves the husband. So there is that element of like here in this example of Kunti, Prabhupada writes that she had this consideration that she preferred her children over the yadus. So therefore, therefore she was praying that please free me from this. So there is that sense of I need mine in some way in that. I mean, that's my understanding. So that one has to be free from that concept. I think that's my understanding of that your question. That yes, but it when it comes to family, my family members, you have something to gain out of it, and that has to go away. And that, I want to emphasize again that it's not that everybody has to, I wanted to clarify that, that it's not that everybody has to take up sannyas. If one is instructed by one's superior, that should remain, depending on what is favorable for Krishna consciousness.
I would just like to say something, a small comment to something that Sureshwar who said. Is that okay? A lot of times, you know, people like to bring up the story of Vishvamitra and how he fell down with Menaka, you know, and they bring that story up again and again, you know, to show the power of sex life and the power of the attraction of women. Of course it was Menaka, that's one thing. But Vishvamitra was trying to become, he was a Kshatriya, he was trying to become a Brahma Rishi. And so he meditated for 20,000 celestial years, and then he fell down with Menaka. So we usually tell that half of the story, but we don't tell the other half of the story. You know. So then what happened after he fell down with Menaka? And Shakuntala was born. And then he went and he meditated for 40,000 years and became a success. So it's like, it's never a good idea if there's fall down in your life to ever become discouraged. There's only one thing you can do, is that it's get up and try again and then become successful. So that's the real lesson from Vishvamitra. Is that he did have the fall down, and after so much austerity, but then he got up again and he became a success.
I think that generally happens because Prabhupada, in most of the context that he quotes Vishvamitra, he talks mainly in terms of fall down. I guess that's the reason why devotees, when they speak about it, they generally speak in terms of the fall down.
Yeah.
And it's a good point that you made, that...
he actually became a Brahma.
Yeah. It's a very important point, yes.
Hare Krishna. I recall this statement made by Jayapataka Maharaj at the Bhaktivedanta Manor a few years ago. And it struck me at the time. I thought, oh, is that his opinion or is it to be taken as a guru's instruction? And he said, he repeated it, that sex life within marriage, you know, even if it is not for procreation, is not a sinful activity. So what I understand from this now is that Grihastha ashram, just like the other ashrams, are shelters, and that if one can control one's sex life through Grihastha ashram, it may be with one's wife, like you, someone said, what did you say, Prabhu? Not to go any further, as a, you know, there's got to be a limit. So with one's wife, with one's husband, is the limit. And that is the shelter that we offer each other. Because something is to be said about indulging to whatever extent is healthy, so as not to be repressed to the point of becoming a monster. There's a saying in French that if you try too hard to be an angel, you become a monster. So perhaps you can elaborate on this, because your class has been so exclusively on that one side of becoming an angel, that would you like to say a few words about not becoming a monster in the process of it?
No, it's like Prabhupada said, if you try for 100%, at least you'll pass. So we should really work hard to attain our goal of pure devotional service. Otherwise, we may not end up succeeding. That is Prabhupada's strategy. He would really push things. As to becoming a monster, Prabhupada mentions that Krishna consciousness is a process of full of hope. So as long as one has that... faith that Krishna will cure my problem, that faith has to be there. Then there's a question about, see this thing about this concept of becoming a this concept turning to the other side, the monster aspect comes because of one's. So one is like, one can think, okay, I am a great brahmachari. The other is to think that I'm not able to be a brahmachari at all. But both of them are concepts based on I. It's thinking in terms of my own endeavor, you know. But simply, if you just like when one is trying to when one is drowning in the sea, the more one tries to swim against the current, you're going to drown surely. But usually, that's what these people who are swimming in the sea, they give the advice: just lay still, you'll get to the shore. And if you're sinking, just stay still, and you'll somehow the waves will push you to the shore. So the point is, if you start trying to work against the current, then it doesn't work really like that. But rather, it is our process is the other way. Like we depend on Krishna. So by depending on Krishna, by strongly depending on Krishna, then it works out like that. It then definitely we reach that stage. There's no doubt about that.
Prabhupada says that sex life, be it legal or illegal, both are abominable in some letter, as far as I remember.
He says that?
Yes.
The Bhagavad purport.
Yes. And today you have explained that Shukadeva Goswami, he has given alternative for sleeping, defending and eating, but there is no alternative for sex life. But in different places, we also find examples where sex life can be considered as pure devotional service. Say for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he produced Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur by using sex life properly. So is it not pure devotional service to produce a child like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? So do you consider it as pure devotional service?
Oh yeah, I mean it's a very good question. The point is that I was basically referring to those living entities or condition. When liberated acharyas do anyway, like their example is like a water on a lotus leaf. It is not, they're not touched by material contamination. So whatever they do, whatever they think, whatever they act is simply pure devotional service. In that there's no consideration. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I could have sex hundreds of times if I could produce Krishna conscious children. So they are talking from their absolute platform. We are talking about our sex desire which has to go away. So until it goes away, we are trying to somehow or the other doubt it. They don't have sex desire, but they're just using it. Like example is given of the tortoise using its limb. And sometimes it withdraws its limbs, sometimes it uses its limbs into outside its shell. You know? It withdraws into the shell. So they're doing it like that. But we may not be doing it from that platform.
Thank you very much.
That's the difference.
Please, my question is on attachments. If someone is attached to his wife, children or husband and they are good devotees, are they not going back to Godhead?
Nobody says they should not be attached. Like Kardama Muni, while one is grihastha, one starts thinking of detachment. That is wrong. While one is grihastha, one has to perform the grihastha duties responsibly. Like you can see, Kardama Muni meditated for so many hundreds and thousands of years. And then he got married, right? So while he was married, you can see what he did. There is so much description of what he did. He was very responsible when he got married. When he got married, he was not thinking, oh, I fell down from my brahmachari platform. Oh my God, what is this? Wife worries invited forever. He's not thinking like that, right? Wife, they say, is worries invited forever. So he's not thinking like that. He's thinking, okay, no, I have Kardama Muni now. So, I'm sorry, I have Devahuti now. So now I have to take care of her. I mean, he's very responsible. So when one is in the grihastha life, just like Krishna told Arjuna, fight. Prabhupada tells that Arjuna cannot fight if he's not angry. He has to be angry. So when, because that is the responsibility given to him by Krishna, you fight now. Similarly, if one takes up grihastha life, Prabhupada expected that devotees are responsible. So one takes up grihastha life, one has to perform the grihastha duties properly. It's not that when one is grihastha, one thinks, oh, this is a fall down, what to do, somehow or the other, I have to get out of it, you know.
Prabhupada asked me, it's a bit difficult to...
But the point is that this can go on only for a while, okay, until you are 50. After that, you stop it.
Okay. My other question is, if a devotee cannot be attached to his family who are also devotees, why must he be attached to other devotees who are also devotees? Yeah. Both of them are devotees.
Yeah.
Attached to devotees and not be attached to your own family is like not right. Because both of them are devotees.
Yes,
that's discrimination. If one can be attached to devotees, he should also be attached to his own devotees who are also children.
Yes, but attached, so, yeah, in what sense? In the pure way. Just like Kunti, she's got Pandavas. Pandavas are, I mean, the pure devotees. They're all pure devotees. Nevertheless, she's praying. Why is she doing that? Because Prabhupada explains, she had some inappropriate attachment. It is not all pure. That is the point. It is not all pure. If it is all pure, then it's fine. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Prabhupada Ki.
His Grace Achyuta Chaitanya Prabhu Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.